This production is brought to you by Magentrix. Magentrix is a pioneer in platforms for partner ecosystem management and partner relationship management. This is Partner Relationship Management, the ultimate channel sales podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Ultimate Channel Sales Podcast. I'm your host, Paul Bird. So on today's episode, we're going to delve into the five principles of successful partnerships and look at the four dysfunctions preventing successful partnerships from growing. And we'll look at how you can start implementing these today. Today's guest has spent nearly a decade as the general manager of partner strategy at Microsoft. Accelerated revenue growth for several companies leading to successful valuations and acquisitions, and was awarded Partner of the Year Award as a channel chief for a billion-dollar ISV. Today, he's the founder of Ultimate Partnerships, a consultancy helping partner organizations drive greater result, and the host of the Ultimate Guide to Partnering podcast. He's on a mission to help organizations do and discover partnerships better. He's here today to talk to us about the five principles of successful partnerships and how to avoid dysfunction. Please welcome Vince Benzione. Vince, great to have you on the show. Absolute pleasure to have you as a guest.
Paul, my pleasure. Honored to be a guest here today. So thank you for having me.
So let's talk a little bit about your background. What's kind of been some highlights of your career in the channel space so far?
Well, you know, I've described my career as four successful business transformations. Started out in the early days of wireless computing. I was asked to start a new business unit. So my background was in enterprise selling, and I'd worked with alliance partners and built credibility and trust through these alliance partnerships. But this organization required me to build a channel from scratch, built out a channel strategy with some successful resellers and influence partners, and grew the business exponentially. We grew from zero to about $30 million in 26 months. And then Microsoft recruited me to be the general manager for the U.S. public sector partner business. So for almost a decade, I led what became a $4.6 billion ecosystem at Microsoft. And a friend of mine, a business coach, said, hey, you know, you'd be great at doing a podcast on what you know and love, partnering. So hence, Ultimate Guide to Partnering was born almost 6 years ago. And we have now surpassed 165 episodes, been on a tear with that. I started up consulting and then started Ultimate Partnerships, the consulting firm. Been doing that for now for several years. At the C-suite, many times organizations fail to align and drive the right set of results for successful partnering. And so I specialize in that area. I specialize primarily with independent software vendors or SaaS software vendors to help their organizations better align, to understand what the principles of successful partnering are, and then also their subsequent channel strategies.
That sounds very interesting and very valuable as well. So let's get to today's topic. How did you come up with these successful principles that we're going to talk about? And how did you start to recognize some of the dysfunctions?
Yeah, so I've always carried this set of beliefs and principles, right? And you know, it's funny how they, I'm a big fan of Stephen Covey and the seven habits, and principles are universal, right? There's a lot of tactics we do, but I started thinking about, like, what are the things that are universal across partnership in general? I had a set of beliefs and operating principles around those. And I think about these principles as both the internal principles or victory and also the partnership victory. I look at them from two sides of the equation. And what I found and what I said earlier is that, you know, organizations struggle internally. The CEO might say some platitudes around what makes successful partnering, or they might say, yeah, we're committed to partnerships. But internally, within the four walls of the organization, are they walking the talk? Are they applying investments? Is the mindset of the organization right? Is there a commitment at the executive level across the organization? Is there accountabilities across the leadership team and the rest of the organization? So what the C-suite says up here and what the sales organization, marketing organization do down here, sometimes are incongruent. They're not attached and related. So how do we get that internal victory right? And so we have some principles around that. We have the mindset, the executive commitment, and having a vision and value first strategy for partnerships. And then, you know, you cross over from the internal victory to the partnership victory. And then what are the things you apply to the partnership, a set of principles that make the partnership stand out. One of them is applying maniacal focus to the partnership.
I love that term. Maniacal focus.
You really do. You need to think about this. And I found that organizations failed because they'd have the great meeting, right? I would sit at the other side of the table as the GM of Microsoft, and I would meet with all these partners. They come to the meetings, and we'd host all these big meetings, all these QBRs, and we'd have executive briefings at all of our big events. We'd have this, you know, the PowerPoint slides and all the great talk and the happy talk and the kumbaya and everything else that goes on, the Barney conversations, I guess is what we would say. And they'd walk out of the room and then nothing would happen because they didn't apply the maniacal focus, right? There was crickets. So you really need to say, what is it? What are the objectives that we need to drive against? How are we going to measure those objectives? What are the milestones? What's the timeline to get there? Simple goal setting or OKR, whatever you want to call it, applying that to the business and measuring it weekly, daily, weekly, monthly across the business, and measuring it with your partner. Like, get in the room and say, what are we doing right? And have candid conversations. Like, it's okay to have an aggressive and diplomatic conversation about what's working, what's not working, as long as you're respectful of each other's positions and you're moving to the same objective, that North Star you're trying to get to. So applying that maniacal focus.
You had also said that kind of the maniacal focus, the commitment should be on one thing. You know, how do you get so many stakeholders to focus on one thing? Is there a process or an exercise that you take them through?
Yeah, you need to peel back. You need to peel back about the one thing. I like to call, you know, how do you stand out as a shiny quarter in a bucket full of shiny quarters? What's that one thing you do better and differently than everyone else? You might be an ISV competing with 10 other ISVs and use Microsoft as an example in their ecosystem. What's the one thing that you do differently? Like, why should the sales team pay attention to you? That's part of your branding and your story, right? What is that one thing? How do you stand out? What does success look like? Why should I care? What's in it for me, right? The WIFM conversation for a sales rep to want to engage with you and your team. So yeah, we need to get down to that. That's part of it. You know, it's part of the exercise we do with the marketing teams when we do the workshops, is to come up with that, or to kind of not so much come up with it. They know what it is intuitively, but they're maybe not peeling it back. And I find so many times organizations, when you look at their website, they've got all these capabilities and expertise and It's just like, I can't, show me the one thing that you do better and different than everyone else, right? I want to get there as quickly as possible. So yeah, we work on that. That's part of the branding and story part of, you know, the principles. And then it's about delivering results. And co-selling is not always for the faint of heart, right? Sales organizations, sellers in general, well, let's just call it what it is. I mean, sellers are very much independent sometimes. Sometimes they're control freaks and they want to do it their way. And getting to work together with another seller is not always intuitive to how people have been trained to sell in their past, right?
Very true.
Some people know how to do it. They came from organizations that were partner-led or partner-assisted, but you got to get there. And so how do you show up? How do you operate together as a unit to go after an opportunity? How do you think about the opportunity holistically? And know that there's not only one decision maker at the customer level, but there are several other layers. There are the five seats at the table. There are other influencers coming into this decision process, and ensure that you've covered your bases with all of those decision makers. So that's an important part of the exercise. And then the last piece is around agility, because as you know, things change. Our economy changes, technology Absolutely. Changes, and you need to be agile. You need to understand how to pivot. You need to understand and be intuitive enough to know that maybe I need to invest in other areas or strategies that I think intuitively will get us where we need to go in terms of our objective or strategy. So that agility is the last component of a successful partnership.
Well, you mentioned something there, that kind of mindset of togetherness. And you hear a lot about that in coaching and development, mainly how the mindset really plays the greatest role. So from your perspective, why is that kind of mindset so important when you are establishing and accelerating partnerships?
You know, it harkens back to when I was at Microsoft, and I was there during the Ballmer days, the Steve Ballmer days, and I was there during the early Satya days. And what a marked difference, right? So during Steve Ballmer, we were competing with everyone. Like, we were fighting 100 battles and trying to win every category. And Satya came in, and first thing he did is we each got a copy of a book by Carol Dweck called Mindset. Talked about the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset. He introduced a coach, Dr. Michael Gervais, who's been a guest on my podcast. He'll be back again pretty soon for his third interview, and he's a mindset expert. He changed the compensation models. And no longer were you rewarded for competing with everybody. Right? Every divisions competed with one another for resources, for compensation. Teams competed with one another. Individuals competed with one another. So he changed the mindset. Fundamentally, that's how he shifted it. I think from a mindset perspective, an organization needs to think growth mindset, forward-leaning mindset, infinite mindset. Like, it's an infinite game. You know, we're not playing to the end. And scarcity mentality versus abundance mentality also enters the conversation on mindset, right? Having the right abundance mentality towards what we're trying to do. Having a partner-led mindset, in fact, or a partner-assisted mindset, partner mindset in general. So that's how I think about mindset and how organizations need to think. We're fortunate enough, you and I, being in the movement we're in right now, we're starting to see more talk about this. Like, a couple of years ago, nobody was talking about it. Now there's several people, thought leaders are coming out and saying, hey, we need to help the C-suite understand this. They need to understand what partner-led or partner-assisted growth looks like. And in fact, you can't do it alone. And so mindset needs to change in an organization. You know, mindsets are fixed based on where people came from, what their past success looked like. And, you know, we tend to gravitate to our old history and our past as we move from organization to organization. So many times the C-suite, as an example on mindset, the CRO might be used to just hiring another 100 salespeople and dialing for dollars. That was the old way of doing things. The CFO would say, we're just going to put money here. Why would we put money towards partnerships? And the CEO, again, also driving that. So that, you know, getting that mindset across the C-suite is just so fundamental to success.
Now, you've also said that companies that don't have a partner-friendly culture, that these are dysfunctional organizations. You know, how do people get out of having that, being in that kind of stuck way of doing things in the past where maybe it was direct only or just not channel friendly whatsoever, so they can move over to having this kind of mindset of togetherness with their partners and getting focused on that success?
I think first off, you have to recognize that there are some dysfunctions in the organization, right? We call the four dysfunctions. And at the bottom of this is trust, right? Trust needs to, is embedded in everything across the organization, and getting trust right is super important to success. Organizations fail because they don't trust their partners, B, they don't trust the process of partnering, and C, they don't trust the organization that is currently given the responsibility for driving partner strategy. And so organizations need to get that trust factor worked through as well. And that's a super important factor. Other areas are the mindset, obviously, is also a dysfunction, not having the partner mindset, not being deliberate enough in the engagement, super important communication, engagement. I talked about like getting the seats at the table, getting everybody in the room to have those conversations. A lot of times we're afraid to have those, right? So we sign an agreement, we have the meetings, we get together, but intuitively we're not really trusting one another, and we're not saying what we really want to say to each other in order to further the cause together. And so that also becomes a factor in certainly the dysfunctionality of partnerships.
So what would you say to, let's say, new VP taking over partnerships, ecosystems, they've been hired to build that channel? I know you've done this in the past, but it's old-fashioned company, right? They're not channel friendly. What advice, what recommendations would you provide to help them make that cultural shift? Or is it even possible?
I think you certainly have to be open-minded. You know, we educate. One of the things we do at Ultimate Guide to Partnering on the podcast is we try to exhibit what success looks like, right? The guests that I bring to the platform generally are leaders in the partnership space. They come from leaders, vendor organizations, or hyperscalers like Microsoft, Google, and the like. But most recent episode, we had a channel chief who's been channel chief at three organizations where she has built very successful partnership strategies. And I think you have to look around the room and see what are the people doing and how are they driving success. And what are the results that they're achieving versus the results you're seeing today? I mean, it's easy to see today that we're going through a little bump in the economy. Organizations are also recognizing that it's harder. People aren't answering the phone. Cookies are being blocked by our platforms. And yes. So we have to find new ways to go to market and new ways to influence customers. And I have guests like Jay McBain on the podcast. He's been a 5-timer on the podcast. And we talk about some of this evolution of the ecosystem strategy. So educating people to what success could look like, bringing resources to bear to help drive that, helping them see. We start off with a SWOT analysis. We want to help them understand. I'll interview the executive team. I'll interview their partners. And we come back with a readout that says, this is what your current state looks like. This is what where your strengths, your weaknesses are, your opportunities and your threats. Simple mm-hmm. business 101, but it's a way to Absolutely. Frame out the conversation to get them think anew about how they should pursue this new strategy.
So then you also mentioned this concept of shared vision. So as part of this shared vision, as it relates to partnerships and ecosystems, what are some of the activities that new head of VP of channel can take to create this shared vision so we've got something to focus on?
Well, somebody needs to put a stake in the ground. And generally, you hope that new channel chief or that new ecosystem leader is going to do that, right? You're going to need to work across your own organization to determine what is our North Star, where do we want to take this, and then get agreement from, in the case of an ecosystem play, maybe there is a chief partner, a hyperscaler partner like a Microsoft or a Google that you're aligned to, and get alignment across your partner ecosystem that this is what we want to go drive together. People mm-hmm. will align to that. Certainly we all vision drives, does a lot of things. It inspires us. It mm-hmm. coalesces us and helps drive our behavior in the right way, right? So if we know this is the intention and this is where we want to go, it helps align both your own organization as well as your partner organization. And so many times I'll come to the meeting and we've got both sides of the table, and nobody knows what the vision is. Like, what is the vision for this? What are we trying to do in 3 years, right? Like, we're having all these meetings, we're doing all this talk, we're trying to drive tactics, but nobody can tell me in the room or articulate, like, what's the vision for success look like?
Yeah. What does success look like? Now, do you think it is more challenging to get internal buy-in on a vision or buy-in from the partner network?
It's a good question. It depends on where the internal organization is in terms of its journey and its mindset, mm-hmm. as well as the partner ecosystem. I think it's probably easier to get the partner ecosystem aligned than it is to get your own organization aligned. If, in fact, your organization suffers from fixed mindset, doesn't have executive commitment, and hasn't thought through its vision and values that it's trying to drive across. So if you've done all those things up front, then certainly it's equal that both sides are driving towards the right.
Now, you also dropped a nugget there, a beautiful one, on the constant and consistent communication. So as you look at this, is there more strategies when it comes to this communication that are more effective than others? And how do you combat the dysfunction of like poor communication, or ultimately the worst, no communication? What steps can people do to improve that?
So show up well. Show up for your meetings well. And this starts at the top and it works its way down to co-selling. At the leadership level, show up for every meeting with a very concise view. I have actually like one or two slides that I generally use as templates with my clients. It takes them through like, this is what we agreed to. And maybe it's only one, two or three objectives that we want to drive against. These are the key results we want to achieve. And this is what success looks like. This is what's left to get to green. And this is the accountability, who owns it. And there's also another accountability exercise we go through. And then when you even get down into the field level, show up well in those conversations. Sellers meeting for the first time, like if I meet you, I want to understand, Paul, why should I work with you? Well, show up mm-hmm. with that one slide. It's a brag slide. It's an infographic. And it says, Paul Bird Enterprises has done X number of business with our company, has driven this number of wins. If I work with Paul and his organization, I can achieve this result against my quota, against my scorecard. And so show up well in the field level, as well as you do in each of the meetings. Be very deliberate in your engagement and don't assume that the other side already knows.
Oh, that's great advice. What about how do you combat or what steps can you take if you've got poor communication? You know, how can you fight the dysfunction if, you know, you're joining an organization and they just have a culture of either non-communicative at all, or it's like pulling teeth. I've worked for organizations like this, so I'm curious to see what suggestions you have to get people out of that rut.
First of all, find an organization that doesn't exhibit these traits would be my first suggestion. But if you're already in one, I would coach my leadership. I would take them to the dance, so to speak, so they could see where it's working in other organizations. I'd invite them to listen to great podcasts like yours and mine. I'd invite them to go to conferences where they'll hear from other leaders about what success mm-hmm. looks like and what other organizations do to be successful. So you have to work with your leadership team in order to help them be successful and to see the light. The good news is more and more organizations are seeing the light than even just a few years ago. And so that's a good thing for all of us that are in the partner roles in these organizations.
For sure. Now, again, I'm kind of going back. You also mentioned agility. Now, as being, you know, a success criteria, a lot of organizations have the headcount, but that doesn't always mean they're agile. So how can a business be more agile? Are there any low-hanging fruit that partner teams can leverage there?
Well, agility is very situational, right? Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example of when I was at Microsoft. We had traditionally invested in the old days in device partnerships and systems integrators and traditional channel partners. Mm-hmm. And then this thing called the cloud happened. And all of a sudden we were building these clouds, right? We built a government cloud in the business I was involved in running. And all of a sudden we had to sell reads and speeds. And so I pivoted the business from these other partnerships that I knew intuitively were going to work. Whether I had partner development managers on, they were self-sustaining. I took a bunch of resources and I moved them into a recruit motion. And we mm-hmm. went and recruited a whole bunch of new partners. One market in particular was healthcare. That was a high growth market. There was a lot of new innovative SaaS technology out there. And we went aggressively and grabbed a bunch of those partners and brought them to the Microsoft Cloud, the Azure Cloud. That's one example of pivoting. Another example of pivoting is in fact, I just spoke with him just recently, a good friend who owns a partner business. He was a systems integrator. And you know, that type of business is low margin business. He found a solution in a particular vertical market and recognized that there were really no competitors. And he built a successful SaaS software company it's on the law enforcement industry. And mm-hmm. he pivoted his business from being, and it was very painful, by the way, because you have the revenue that's coming in today and you're investing in your future state. So you have to think through that whole agility, that pivot process to do it successfully. And as you know, any of the companies that have moved to the cloud, Adobe was the first, one of the first examples of an organization, a company that moved its product to subscription. It was very painful for Adobe in the beginning, and they've yeah. reaped the reward since. Their stock accelerated growth over the last few years. So pivoting is, you know, again, very situational, but you need to think through, like, where is the business going? How do I need to move my resources, my money, my people to drive the most optimal results for the business?
And the risk reward, right?
Yeah.
Because you make that pivot, you know, you talk about the SWOT analysis right at start, you decide that you want to make that change and go from, you know, I've got a guaranteed distribution path for, you know, pushing boxes out the door. Now I'm going to move this to a subscription that renews monthly or annually. Like,
yeah,
that's jumping off the cliff.
And a fraction of the annual revenue monthly. Then I was
exactly,
you know, getting those annual contracts up front, paid up front most of the time.
Is there anything that you can do as a channel lead to empower your partners? You know, if you're making these changes at a business level and, you know, having this great foresight to be able to make these changes, is there any way that trickles down into the partner network itself where you can empower them to a degree?
Absolutely. Platforms like yours help drive some of that process, right? Once you've put that stake in the ground and you said, this is where we're going to go the business, then you need to inform, you need to educate, You need to drive the investments into the business in the right way to drive the right behavior to drive the results that you or wish to achieve, right? So all of those things need to happen, right? And your investment in your resources, how you think about your partner ecosystem, educating, enabling, supporting, and rewarding. So I think through each of those is certainly how you ignite your channel to be successful.
And then another nugget there, and I was listening to one of your podcasts, and there was a line that you said that was absolutely beautiful around the concept of trust. You said trust is the oxygen of partnership. And I couldn't agree with that more. So suggestions on how organizations can be top performing and provide the trust and transparency, everything that people are looking for, right? So suggestions on how you can communicate that, any strategies you can go through?
You know, trust is, you earn trust over time. You exhibit trustworthiness. And over time, you, by exhibiting the right behaviors, you create trust, right? So it's not something, it's not tactical, it's more strategic. And how you exhibit it both within your own organization and across to the other side of the table, as part of that metaphor, to the partner to build it. And there are all the things that you do that are the right set of principles to go do that, right? I come back to Stephen Covey and the Seven Habits and some of the things that he talks about in his work. But yeah, that without the trust, the oxygen sucked out of the room. And that can happen pretty easily. Unfortunately, it happens way too often within partners.
I actually had a conversation, a podcast just a couple of weeks ago, talking about kind of the how to lose a partner in 30 days. And that was exactly what was behind it, is the absence of trust, taking a deal direct, having that short-sightedness. My approach has always been just transparency. I don't hide anything. I show it all. And if people have questions, I've got answers. So that's the approach I've always taken to making sure that, you know, there's clarity, but I just that phrase that it's the oxygen within a partnership, because the visualization that drives is without it, it's gone.
Yeah. It's and you reminded me, you know, as a tactical leader building a channel, you've got to over pivot on abundance. You have to share opportunities. You have to really help the partner be successful up front and build the trust, build the relationship so that they come back again and again and again. I think about an example where when I was starting up that government sector and we had not sold to any of the military, but there was this conference I went to and I went in the room and these leaders, these colonels were all in the room talking about this one organization. And I recognized that they were a key influencer and systems integrator that could drive the success of my offering. And I got the meeting with them. Well, we helped build their business. We gave them opportunities first. And then ultimately they brought us in the room and we met with those colonels and we yielded the rewards of a lot of successful years of growth and strategy and revenue together.
So the Ultimate Partnerships, the consultancy that you run right now, tell us a little bit more about that and how you kind of take an organization that has maybe in the past been not overly channel friendly, maybe is looking for a new mindset, maybe they have new leadership. What's the kind of secret sauce, to a degree, of what you can share with us, that the evolution path that you would like to take them on?
You know, and again, it's situational, but again, starting out with a set of principles, there are things that we do around each of those principles to ensure that they're successful. Moving to a mastermind is allowing us the opportunity to come in the room and do a lot more up front and do it in a shorter period of time to accelerate success versus me coming in the room and following them along for a period of time. But you know, we cover off on mindset. I meet with the leadership team. I talk to them about what success looks like, what commitment looks like, how they need to think in their organization across each of the functional areas and who's responsible, accountable for each of those functions. And then what does that strategy look like across their partner ecosystem? Do they have an alliance strategy? And what does that look like? Do they have a channel or influencer strategy? Do they have a tech partner strategy? And then holistically looking across all of that ecosystem approach. And then applying the principles across the organization, getting to branding, getting to co-selling, driving the right set of results, showing up for those partners in the right way so that they can be successful.
Perfect So if we start to wrap things up, if organizations embody your principles, first of all, avoiding the dysfunctions, but really looking on culture, commitment, communication, trust, what sort of results do you think they can expect?
Well, we hope to achieve their greatest results. And those numbers are dependent, again, on the organization, where they are today, where they're going in terms of the future. We generally see upticks of 30, 40% growth over a period of time, whether it be 6 months, a year, 2 years of working together and achieving their top status with a tech partner like Microsoft, or just growing their channel and building their channel strategy across their organizations.
So if somebody wants to learn more, they want to listen to the Ultimate Guide to Partnering, your podcast, what's the best way for them to find you?
So we're on all of the major platforms, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google, and ultimateguidetopartnering.com is our website. It'll get you to each of the podcast episodes. There's a search feature. You can search through all the 165 plus episodes that are out there. You could reach out to me at vincem@ultimate-partnerships.com.
Well, all right, Vince, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Paul, been my pleasure. Thank you. I love what you're doing. You've been just driving a lot of excitement and enthusiasm through your podcast and your work. And podcasting is not for the faint of heart. So my applause to you for all that you put into this. It's a really quality podcast. Thank you.
Perfect. Thanks so much, Vince.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you for listening to the Ultimate Channel Sales Podcast. Please don't forget to join us next time. For more information, please visit channelsalespodcast.com. If you haven't already, please like and subscribe to our podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode today, please leave us a 5-star rating. From the Apple Podcast app, just select our show, scroll down to the rating and review section, and click write review. And don't forget to share with your friends or professional network, anyone who'd enjoy it. See you next time on the Ultimate Channel Sales Podcast. This production is brought to you by Magentrix. Magentrix is a pioneer in platforms for partner ecosystem management and partner relationship management.